Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Rabona Podcast. Once again, I'm Mesut Kwonga, and I'm joined again by Ryan Hunt and Marco Da Silva. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
And we're going to discuss the struggles of the European giants, Bayern Munich and Real Madrid, and those who are taking advantage of those challenges. So, let's go straight in. Bayern Munich, they lost 3-0 at home to Borussia Mönchengladbach.
Stunning result from the Allianz Arena. They were really, really, really poor. Firstly, let's say how good Gladbach were. They've had a great season. I think they're going to be there or thereabouts at the end of the season, pushing for the top four. And yeah, they look very good. Player is their, has been their key man. He's got a great goal in this game. But Bayern, yeah, they big issues there. I mean, I like Kovac. I'd like to see him, you know, turn it around, but it does. There's a lot of worrying signs. The team seems very, very unbalanced, and they seem to be short on ideas.
Your colleague Jonathan Harding at Deutsche Welle commented that perhaps there was an issue with the squad aging. So there's not only a transition from one coach to the next, but maybe there's a sense that, you know, this is the older squad, I think, on average in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, I mean, Kovac has had to integrate, and this is perhaps a bullet that Jupp Heynckes was able to dodge, but Kovac's job is to evolve this squad and take it from, you know, that the old guard, Robin, Ribery, Boateng, even Müller to an extent, and integrate the likes of Serge Gnabry. You know, we've seen Renato Sanchez play a big role this year, but I don't know whether he's tried to do too much too fast.
Right.
He tried to, and I mean, I don't want to put blame on Kovac because I think it's unfair. But Mats Hummels was not happy. He was not happy with I think it's the tactics. He came out and said something the other day. James Rodriguez stormed out of the stadium 10 minutes after full time of the Ajax draw. He was a substitute in that game and got half an hour, but wasn't able to turn it around. And Bayern were lucky not to lose that game. So yeah, integrating new players has been a problem for him. But against Gladbach, they were ragged, and they didn't have a shape. And they've now gone four games in all competitions without a victory. Lost two of those. Should have lost another one. Yeah, it's not looking good.
And just to throw this in as well, we'll go back to Madrid in a moment, but just to draw the analogy with what Madrid are doing, they've had a similar challenge. I think this is why Zidane was a bit relieved to leave, because he saw there being issues with the squad and the transition and the evolution and development of the squad.
Yeah.
And that wasn't really a job he fancied doing, I think, which is understandable after, you know.
Well, Real Madrid's problem seems to be scoring goals at the moment. Is it, how many games have they gone without scoring?
I think it's five or six now.
And that's a record.
Yeah, they are not playing well at all at the moment. And obviously they've lost Ronaldo, who's a massive goal threat, but they've got enough goals in that team. So a lot of pressure on Lopetegui, like the same way there is on Kovac, two new managers in big jobs who are, they're under, I mean, massive pressure.
Yeah. I think we underestimate how difficult it is to reconfigure an attack after someone like Ronaldo leaves. You know, not just the fact that he was someone that scored the goals, but the positions he took up, the runs he made, those are now things that as an attacker, as a midfielder, you can't make those passes anymore. You can't put the balls into those places. So you've got to work out new roles, new runs. And you've got players like Benzema, the greatest respect. Benzema was not the reliable goal threat for so many years at Madrid. And now that's expected from him. Bale's being reintegrated into the attack. And these things take time. And you look at La Liga, those defenses are extremely well organized. They're smart. They can't just, you can't pick apart the average La Liga defense with just individual brilliance, unless you're, you know, Leo Messi, and even he needs help. So yeah. But back to Bayern, because I want to talk about what's happening in the Bundesliga. And you made a very good point early on. You didn't just put this down to Bayern struggling.
Yeah.
There is very clearly, you know, a sort of quantum shift in the quality of the challenges this year. So we're looking at Leipzig. They're looking good. I met a huge win at the weekend. Dortmund, not only scoring goals, but showing an incredible resilience.
Yeah.
So there's other things. What else is happening?
Well, let's not kid ourselves. The Bundesliga was only going to become exciting once Bayern became worse. That's a given. We always said, oh, well, the challengers need to step up to the plate, and they have improved. There's no doubt about that. But most of the reason that we've got such an exciting Bundesliga this year is because Bayern's quality has dropped. Having said that, Dortmund have been absolutely fantastic, breathless at times. They're always going to concede goals. They let in three against Augsburg, but crucially they scored four, and the manner with which they were able to turn that game around was thrilling. And Paco Alcacer.
I
knew that was going to trip me up. Paco Alcacer, he has been a revelation. He doesn't always start, but he always seems to score. We've spoken a lot about Jadon Sancho on this podcast before. Another assist for him and a call up to the England squad, much deserved. But you look at that forward line, even Mario Götze came off the bench, he scored. They seem to have goals all over the place, whereas last year that wasn't the case. So they're leading the Bundesliga, and deservedly so. But you mentioned Leipzig there, they hammered Nuremberg 6-0, so they seem to be finding their groove. Gladbach, Hertha Berlin, it's nice to see.
Werder Bremen,
of course. Yeah, Davy Klassen was had a nightmare season at Everton last year, and has really redeemed himself.
He's playing really well.
Yeah, so it's really really nice to see it mixed up. As a neutral, it's exactly what that league has been crying out for.
I think the fun thing about Dortmund this season is that they seem to have got that energy that they had at like peak Klopp and peak. They had it at moments with Tuchel as well, but the game on the weekend was just absolutely amazing. The atmosphere was incredible.
Yeah.
It was really exciting, and you know that was, I think, as a neutral, one of the reasons we used to watch Dortmund a lot of the time was because it was genuinely high energy, excitement.
Yeah.
Whether they lost or won, it was like you knew you were going to get a really entertaining game. And they kind of lost their mojo a little bit over the last couple of years. And it seems that Lucien Favre has really ignited them again. And one thing he's doing really well is, I think, is his choice. It was something I mentioned that Emery has been doing really well for Arsenal, and I think Lucien Favre has done it as well. His choice and his management of the squad has been really, really good this season. Like, who gets minutes when?
Yeah,
you know, who starts when? Jadon Sancho started on the weekend, I believe, right?
He did, yeah.
And you know, he's kind of gradually rewarding him from his performances, and there seems to be a real unity there that I've not seen at Dortmund for a little bit.
He's got five or six forward players, and he's rotating them enough to keep them hungry, but not too much to unsettle the team. And he's found that balance really well. But one thing I wanted to mention about Favre is that he's really managed to bring the best out of Marco Reus. You know, we saw Michy Batshuayi last year. He scored lots of goals in the second half of the season for Dortmund, and a lot of people, me included, thought, well, Dortmund need to replace this guy. But Favre thought, well, no, we're just going to play Reus up top. And Favre was Reus's coach at Gladbach a few years ago, so he knows his talent. When he broke through, he was playing under him, so he's returned him to a central position, and Dortmund look all the better for it. And I have to say, Dortmund for me, have been one of the most thrilling teams to watch in Europe this year.
They were great against Monaco. What I love about the two performances, you saw them against Augsburg and it was like rock and roll, almost like sort of late 90s. Yeah, sort of late 90s, early 2000s, Manchester United, weirdly enough. You know, but then you look at the game against Monaco and there was this incredible patience. Monaco very much struggling. They're 11th place now in the French league. They're really struggling. But if you look at the way that the patience with which Dortmund unpicked them, each of the three goals they scored against them in Champions League, they really dismantled them. Each of the three goals, they weren't sort of individual strikes from distance. They were Sancho drawing the man, slipping it through. And Alcacer, I was going to sort of shout out to him because he had a very, very tough time playing as the nine for Barcelona, a really tough time. And I want to say that on the podcast because he is someone that got so much criticism last year, you know, online by the pundits. And this is a superb player who really has found his place in a superb team and is showing what a fantastic player he is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also it's worth shouting out Axel Witsel and Delaney as well, two summer signings who are forming a really good partnership. You know, Weigl's come in occasionally and done really well as well. You know, highly rated player still at Dortmund, but I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one. When I saw Dortmund going after Witsel, I was a little bit, you know, one eyebrow raised. And not a kind of player you would associate with a Dortmund midfield maybe, but actually, I don't think they're defensively mega tight as we saw at the weekend. But I think that actually those two in midfield keep them a little bit safe.
Yeah, I've been impressed by both of them. And they protect the back four well, especially the central defence, because they're both young players and I think they're both developing and we'll see more from them next year. They're learning the game. So they need some experienced defensive midfielders in front of them. And Witsel's been really good. But I think that one of the key things with Dortmund's success is a lot of young players. I mean, we see Pulisic. He's probably played the least of the attacking players this year. But when called upon, these guys are over-delivering more than what we expect. And that, to bring it full circle, is the complete opposite of what we've seen from Bayern. We see experienced players like, I can't remember if it was the second goal that Gladbach scored, where it was a terrible pass to start with from Neuer. Thiago was instantly put under pressure, miscontrolled it. And then Hummels was just turned way too easily. And these are three players that you expect way, way more from. So, you know, people will criticize Kovac, but some really experienced Bayern players need to look at themselves.
Yeah, I mean, Hummels defending for the third goal was just, I mean, when I was watching it, I actually thought there must have been a whistle or something.
Yeah.
Because he just stopped and gave up. And the other two in the middle, I can't remember who they were, but a lot of problems going on at Bayern. They don't seem a happy camp.
I have serious concerns about Hummels just generally as a player. I think he never had much pace, but he was always able to read the game and know where to be at the right time and make that right decision. But his decision making is off. And you know, Bayern's success over the years has been built over that really dependable central defence. And Boateng is also not the player he was. And this is where, you know, you need to look at the players because they're not performing at the level that we expect from them. We also need to look at the Bayern board and say, well, maybe they should have put their hands in their pockets this summer. And, you know, Bayern are a club that make a lot of money and they should be, you know, their record signing is Tolisso. They need to be spending more.
Well, there was that, footage or picture of Rummenigge and Hesse storming down to the dressing room after the game. So I don't know, maybe some stuff's going to come up.
Well, I think complacency is a big issue there. You know, they probably don't feel like they need to spend to win the Bundesliga, and maybe to an extent they're right, but they're never going to be European champions again unless they consider the opposition throughout Europe. And that's, you know, your Real Madrid's, your Barcelona's. These are the teams that Bayern should be comparing themselves with.
No, all great stuff. And I want to say before we move on to talk about Spain, which we will just in a brief moment, I love that you mentioned Pulisic, because I remember thinking this time last year, if you'd said who's the primary playmaker for Dortmund, you might have mentioned him and like alongside Royce, maybe more than Royce. And the fact that he basically got an afterthought in this podcast just shows the depth in attack that Dortmund have, which is really exciting.
It's changed really fast at Dortmund, and it's good to see.
What I love about that, and you know, in contrast to Madrid, for example, I think there is a real problem with complacency. You know, the challenge of freshening up a squad with new signings, you know, Courtois in goal, that's a great addition, I think. Mm-hmm. I think it's a challenge to Navas, who is a fantastic player, but I think you need to make these big signings to keep everyone on their toes. They haven't done that in different parts of the field. And you have Lopetegui as well, who really came in sort of chaotic circumstances and is, you know, very visibly not enjoying himself, and neither is the president, Florentino Perez. And there's an iconic moment when Alaves scored the winning goal late in injury time, and just, you know, Lopetegui's head in his hands. And I was thinking to myself, you know, there are many clubs where you'd have a more charitable reception to a result like this, but Madrid is very much not one of those clubs.
Well, which players have Real Madrid brought in over the last few years? Like, say, the 3 years since Zidane took the job. They haven't really added to that squad. And that's where Zidane has been, you know, he's been rightly applauded for winning three consecutive Champions Leagues. But he never had to do some major surgery on that team. And they're kind of aging together.
Well, the weird thing with Madrid is they've got these young attackers, Mariano, I think, and Vinicius Junior. These youth, they've kind of skipped a generation in their additions, right? It's really weird.
Yeah, they
kind of hit like a basketball. They've blown it up.
They're like the Lakers were. Yeah. Remember the Lakers were adding all those players and trying to win a ring for the first time. They didn't actually win. You know, they had sort of Karl Malone and whatever. And, you know, God bless them. Sorry, no offense.
One Lakers thing I'd say about the game of the weekend for Real is it shows how important Carvajal and Marcelo are for them. And they just looked very stale. And to be honest, I mean, I only caught a little bit of the game on the highlights, but I might be wrong here, but it wasn't a steal. Do you know what I mean?
No, it was fair. Can I be quite brutal as well here? You know, Tony Kroos has been very vocal about the failings of other players in the last few months. We won't name those players because we've gone into that detail already.
Leroy Sané.
But Tony Kroos. Tony Kroos did not. Okay, since we're naming
Okwonga.
Since Kroos called. Look, Tony Kroos did not have the best Champions League final. He looked quite rattled against the early press in a way that Modric didn't. And against CSKA Moscow, he made a terrible mistake in the midweek in the Champions League to concede the only goal. And, you know, I think that teams have worked out how to press him. He's a tremendous playmaker, but when you press him, you cause trouble because he's not defensively that strong. And so there are structural problems. And what amazes me, actually, is that Real Madrid allowed Kovacic to go so quickly to Chelsea because there's a superb player who would have been terrific if they'd reconfigured the Madrid midfield.
Yeah, especially knowing that there's going to be a new coach, he's going to have new ideas. Makes sense, right?
Right. It's extraordinary. Whoever allowed Kovacic to go so quickly to Chelsea really has to look at themselves, because that's a superb player. And that really, I saw him as the future of the Madrid midfield.
Mm. I mean, that Madrid three in midfield, or I think they actually played a four at the weekend. I think they kind of played a 4-4-2. Casemiro, Kroos and Modric. Modric is by far the most dynamic out of those three. And he's not exactly a lung-busting, box-to-box kind of midfielder. He's busy, but Casemiro does his job really, really well. But I think if they had someone like Kovacic or a more dynamic, even maybe moving Isco into
Aaron Ramsey.
Don't do it. You know, as another one of the three. Because Isco always comes central when he plays wide anyway. And I think that there's some serious questions to be answered about Toni Kroos. And Lopetegui's got to figure that out quick, because Real Madrid not scoring for over 6 hours or whatever it is now, that's not something that a lot of managers would survive.
And what I love about La Liga is you really can't rest on your laurels, because you've got a club like Atletico Madrid who had a difficult start, you know, maybe just making a transition, but they are very much edging up in the outside rail. And what I love about their recent game, they beat Real Betis 1-0 this weekend. What I love about it is it's the most Atleti result ever. So they win 1-0 at home. I think they had 36% possession. They scored a late goal and then just shut out Betis. Mm. And what I love about that result is it's like, yeah, this is peak Simeone. This is a club that I think they played 8, won 4, drawn 3, lost 1. They looked really good. They looked really good in the Champions League as well.
I've got the table just here. Atleti, played 1, 4, drawn 3, lost 1, scored 9, conceded 4.
Exactly, conceded 4. They looked really good in the midweek in the Champions League. Griezmann was absolutely brutal. I mean, minimal possession, but maximal efficiency. And what I love about Atleti is they're just clicking into gear really nicely again. Lamar has integrated well to that team. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Sevilla looking really good. Barca rumbling along as usual.
Mm-hmm. To do with the Atleti thing, Colin Miller posted a really interesting thing about Betis, who they're only 8th and they're only 4 points off the top spot at the moment. But I think he said that something like, Betis have not conceded goals in 16 of their 17 halves of football. Well, 16 of their last 17 halves of football. So I was like, but they've not really scored many either. So I went back and had a look and figured out that they've only scored in 5 of their last 20 halves. So they've had this real, they're really solid defensively and they're really actually quite fun to watch, but they just can't finish.
They're the Mainz of La Liga.
but if they can start finishing or add someone who can finish and put away, they could be really dangerous as well. They've made some really good signings, you know, winning Cavallo, Mark Bartra, we spoke about last week, Canales. They've got like good players in that squad. Mm. If they can get a real finisher, they could even rock it up there.
It's also the case in the Bundesliga that a lot of the teams that are maybe bottom half and some of the top half, they're just one really solid striker away from shooting way up the table.
Right, right.
And that can often be the difference.
Briefly mention the La Liga table. Alaves are also sixth. Espanyol are fifth. I know it's only 8 games in, but first to 10th, there's 6 points at the moment, which is pretty intriguing. Mm.
It's intriguing, absolutely. What I would say in Real Madrid's defence, not that many people would have uttered that phrase, is that they grab 2-3 wins on the bounce. They're back in the mix again.
Yeah.
You know, and they're only a few points back still. When we're talking about struggling giants, we can talk about... It's a bit of a...
I'm going to talk about Man United again.
I don't know if they're still giants, but interesting win for United at the weekend. They came back from 2-0 down after widespread reports that Jose Mourinho was going to be sacked at the weekend. They came back to win 3-2. Mm. We won't dwell on that result too much because we had a long chat about United in the last podcast, but just fascinating how that was very much a result that you would not have expected at halftime, given that United were 2-0 down to Newcastle and looking, frankly, pretty awful.
The thing that interested me about that game is that the three players that dug United out and possibly saved Mourinho his job are three players that have been sidelined by Mourinho himself. Mata, Martial, and especially Sanchez. So, I don't know, Mourinho could say, well, yeah, there it worked, you know. But you could also say that there's more players that he's alienated than he hasn't.
I think I texted you after the game, didn't I, about Scott McTominay?
Yeah.
And I think that actually this weekend was the first time that this Mourinho situation actually made me a little bit angry, because there was a moment in the first half where, I mean, he started Scott McTominay again as the right of a back three centre back, and he's not a centre back, he's a young developing centre midfielder.
Yeah.
Newcastle came out of the blocks, played the best football I've seen them play this season. Now, whether that's because of them or because of the situation at United, we don't know. But then he hooked by after, was it 17
minutes?
20 minutes. 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And left Scott McTominay as a centre-back in a back four with Chris Smalling. Mm. And then took him off at half-time. You know, this felt to me quite cruel, where you had...
Publicly humiliating.
And playing a guy in a out of position who's still young, still developing, and then him getting exposed quite rightly in that position because it's not his best position. And then he comes off at half time.
I don't think it's a sustainable relationship. I think that, you know, watching Mourinho and watching United beat Newcastle, that's a team United should be beating with that kind of firepower, frankly. It just was sheer natural talent should be beating them. And I really feel like this win will be looked back on as one of those periods in a relationship. You know, you've been with someone for a few years in a relationship and like, you think it's over, but you have a really nice weekend together and you think, oh, there might be something still in this. Well, no, it's the long-term trend is it's over and you're kind of just enjoying the dying embers, but it's done, I think. And that's my opinion on the whole thing.
From a spectacle point of view, it would have been quite unbelievable if Benitez had pulled off a victory and been the one that finally got him the sack after their history as well. I mean, I know it's a little bit kind of like tabloid.
No, but that's football. That's football.
You know, I mean, he was quite mean about about Benitez, and
he was brutal.
That would have been, you know, I kind of like to see Rafa do well.
Yeah,
and he's had a really difficult situation at Newcastle as well, and he's stayed pretty dignified about the whole thing.
It's rich for Mourinho to talk about a manhunt when he's been bullying other coaches for years
and players. I mean, he's been manhunting players out of his own. I mean, signing Mkhitaryan would probably laugh. You know, it was Mourinho said, "I'm 55 years old, and the first time in my life I've seen a manhunt." I was like, "Well, you literally signed a player, didn't play him for two months, put him in a derby against City, hooked him at half time, and then laid into him." You know, it's bizarre.
It kind of just seems. I know we've spoke about this a lot, so maybe, I think it just seems to be that he doesn't, something about it seems like he doesn't want to get out of the situation because some of the decision making is so crazy with the lineups. If you're struggling, I mean, it's very easy for me to sit here in my comfy chair and with zero coaching qualifications or whatever, but you tend to see people revert to, you know, safety first, very kind of like organized, and which is what Mourinho has been great at over the years. And it's just all very scatterbrained, and something needs to give, I think.
Let's not forget the role of the owners in all of this as well.
Yeah, they've for been,
sure. They've been if you treat a football squeezing club as like, much yeah. money out of them as they can over the last
If you
10
treat
years.
A football club like a revolving credit facility, as they have done, you know, essentially the owners of Manchester United enjoy football about as much as Mike Ashley does, probably less, frankly. And they're basically, in terms of their attitude towards the ethos of football and the running of a club, they're essentially Mike Ashley with better PR. Yeah. They just don't appear in public. They just don't, you know, do the whole, like, they don't give it the whole wide boy act, but they're pretty brutal people. And for, let me just be this honest as well, on a personal note, I find their support of Donald Trump's re-election absolutely reprehensible. I need to say that on the record, because
for sure.
they're organising a fundraiser for Trump's re-election. You know, that's what we're dealing with, you know. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, while we're on the Premier League, we might as well talk a little bit about Arsenal.
I don't mind about that.
They were pretty impressive. Big win for Chelsea as well against Southampton. But Arsenal first. I mean, we saw the best from Lacazette, and Aubameyang got a couple. How do you think about their performance? Ramsey too, by the way.
Yeah, Ramsey came on and did really well. Mm. I tweeted at halftime that it was a weird game because Fulham, I think, had way more chances than Arsenal in the first half. And then all of a sudden, Arsenal got the goal, looked like they could have got a couple before half time. And then Fulham scored just before half time, Andre Schürrle with a really good finish. And all of a sudden, it was a bit familiar. It was very. That's a situation that Arsenal have got themselves in a lot of times over the years. But then, fair play to them in the second half. They really kind of got into their stride. I think they were helped by some very kind defending, let's
say.
Yeah,
I wasn't sure at times whether it was Fulham being very bad or Arsenal being very good. It was probably a mixture.
Yeah, definitely. But Lacazette looks really good. I really, in, again, what we were saying with Lucien Favre earlier, what I think Emery's had a really tricky week. You know, Watford at home, who seem to maybe, well, maybe we'll talk about them in a bit, but and then a big trip to Azerbaijan week.
And I should just say that he didn't use the competition in the way that Wenger did, where he would play a significantly weaker team. He kept the core of that team there.
Yeah, he brought Lacazette and Ozil on at 2-0 in that game on Thursday against Karabag.
Yeah.
But he's basically, I think he's really... he's doing a really, really good job of rotating the players, and there seems to there's still issues, but I think it's starting to click, and I think actually this was a really, really important game. I think winning this one and going into the international break with 9 on the bounce was massive.
Well, that's what I was going to say. 9 wins in all competitions in a row.
Yeah, they lost the first two. I mean, talk about a baptism of fire. The champions at home and then Chelsea away.
Yeah.
And then I think if you'd asked any Arsenal fan before the season, you'll lose those games, but you'll win 9 on the bounce going into the second international break. I think everyone would have absolutely taken it.
Yeah.
Can I just throw this as well, just in relation to the win or the approach towards the Europa League? Emery, the king of the Europa League at Sevilla.
Mm.
So he's someone that really understands the prestige, the importance of that tournament, what that can bring to a club, the momentum it can bring. So I love that he is kind of carrying that tradition on, because obviously we've had a lot of managers who haven't taken that Thursday night league so seriously, but I think it's a great stepping stone.
I also think that he, before the season, would have identified that as probably their best chance of getting back into the Champions League as well. Mm. So, I mean, currently they're fourth. I think they're just ahead of Spurs on goal difference, but it's very, very tight up there again. You know, I think it's Bournemouth right behind Spurs and then Wolves.
The way things are going, though, I think Arsenal, you have to say, are heading right into that top four. United are off the pace a little. Spurs are kind of stop-start. I mean, I think Arsenal are the form team at the moment going into those upper places.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think there will be tougher tests and that will be a real barometer of where they're at. But I think after getting those two difficult games out of the way very early on, it's kind of let them have a, you know, not a super easy run, but a fairly kind run of fixtures to find their groove so that everything is a lot more familiar when those big games come up, you know. And I think they're also quite lucky is that they don't have too many massive back-to-back games. There's a trip, Europa League game before the North London Derby, but other than that, there's no more kind of like Man United away than Spurs away.
I have to say, I'm, as a Spurs fan, happy that the North London Derby is not right now.
But then again, the Spurs record is really good. I mean, what played 8, won 6, lost 2. That's a really good record.
Yeah.
Yeah, under Pochettino, they've been by far the better team in the North London Derby in the last few years, for sure.
Spurs are just good. Okay, this is the thing. This is the problem that Spurs have. Very, very good performance is the new normal for them. They're now operating at level. And that's a credit to Spurs now, that people are mildly disappointed with things so far. I mean, they got torn apart by Messi against Wembley, but frankly, not the first or the last thing that Messi will tear apart at Wembley, so no shame there. Yeah. And, you know, they're still keeping a good fist of it. I think the thing that impresses me about Arsenal, I will say, is the attacking depth, like Dortmund. They've got Iwobi, they've got Mkhitaryan. Iwobi's been great.
Actually, yeah, Iwobi deserves a lot of praise because he was brought in and played in very, very big games, like against Barcelona away, for example, in the Champions League, and then seemed to kind of stall. And I think that in the last few years of Wenger's reign, you saw that with a lot of young players. They came through, but then they struggled to actually push on to that next level. Mm. And he seems to be making a lot of noises about how much he's enjoying his football under Emery. And I actually think Emery really, really likes him.
Mm. I should mention as well, while we're on the topic of Arsenal, that Ryan has written a very good article on Aaron Ramsey. He's far too humble to...
far too humble.
But yeah, you should check that out on the website, rabonamag.com. Really nice piece.
Yeah, he sent me the piece and I liked the piece so much. Yeah. I was like, oh my goodness, my piece has gone out on the website. And I saw it and I was like, I didn't have an edit function because I was hoping to put my own name on top of it.
Well, these are the things that you two are professionals and I feel like I've got my two uncles are being like, well done, lad.
Ryan, you're the pro. You're in.
Should we talk about Spurs? Because I want to talk about the red card for Cardiff, which was possibly one of the wildest tackles I've seen.
I was watching that game with German commentary and they couldn't believe that it was a red card.
No way.
Couldn't believe it. Yeah. I mean, my German's good enough now to understand that they were perplexed, but for me, it was one of the clearest red cards you'll ever see. Absolutely.
It would have been a red card in Kreisliga.
I was going to say, anyone that's played with German referees at amateur level will have a different story.
Yeah, true.
How do you assess the... I mean, from a neutral, it kind of just seemed like that Cardiff game was a game they just needed the points to get out of the way.
Yeah, it was a terrible game. Spurs eventually, they just kind of saw it out and got the win, but they didn't play well. Without Christian Eriksen, Spurs are a completely different team. I mean, they can afford to lose Dele Alli, Dembele. They've got enough in reserve to compensate for that. But Christian Eriksen's a very different type of player. Once in a kind of, well, Spurs haven't had a player like him since Modric. So when he's out, Spurs really feel it. And yeah, they really struggle to create opportunities. And that was the problem against Barcelona. And it's even a problem, with the greatest respect, against Cardiff as well. So yeah, having the depth of squad to handle injury crisis is an issue. But for a club that don't spend that much, yeah, you have to expect that. But my biggest concern from that game is that it's early October and Lucas Moura was wearing gloves.
Shocking.
He's there, right? Maybe he's got poor circulation. You never know. Cold hands.
Unacceptable.
Was he wearing short sleeves? That's the only thing. If it was short sleeves...
Hey, Pogba was rocking short sleeves and gloves yesterday.
Yeah, but I have an issue with that too. I mean, I love Pogba. You know, we've got to say it as it is. But one thing, let me throw this in as well, in relation to squads, which are impressive, but maybe a bit small. And we'll get to Bournemouth in a second because they deserve their own moment of praise. Eden Hazard is absolutely superb for Chelsea. I just worry with Chelsea if squad depth is a challenge for them, because it's the only thing that, to me, will hold them back over the next few months, because they look superb at the moment.
They do. Ross Barkley scored a really good goal. Eden Hazard, as you say, was superb. Yeah, I think Chelsea are going to be there or thereabouts. And I said at the start of the season that they would struggle. How wrong I was.
You know, it's funny with Chelsea. It's because they treat their company... Freudian slip. They treat their club like a company and they headhunt for a CEO / coach and they bring him in and they have the performance metrics, and if they're poor, they underperform, they get them out, and they don't have any shame in that. And that's actually just really good corporate governance.
Yeah, Chelsea have become, you know, when you think about when Abramovich first took over in 2003, they were throwing the cash about all over the place, but they're now, much like Manchester City, a very well run company. I don't think it was a Freudian slip at all.
Mariana Granovskaya has to be given great credit for that, Mariana Granovskaya, for her recruitment and the way they're really forensic, the way they look for their coaches.
She's been crucial in all of the good work that they've done behind the scenes. But, you know, Chelsea, yeah, they judge themselves on how many Premier Leagues they win, and they need to be there or thereabouts in the latter stage of the Champions League. So that has to happen for them in the next year or two.
Yeah, I think that even though they only won the league 2 years ago, there's a very clear sign there with how they can progress, which is to, they tend to yo-yo quite a lot, Chelsea. They'll win the league and then they'll drop out to fifth or sixth. I think they really want to solidify as like a top three, a proper top three every year, deep in the Champions League. And I think actually with someone like Sarri, it's the first time in a while I can see, again, kind of very similar to Lucien Favre at Dortmund, a little bit more unity and a little bit more fun, maybe. They look like they're actually, there's a better spirit there at Chelsea than there has been for a while.
Let me get in, talking of teams competing at the top, unexpected team maybe up there at the moment, is Bournemouth, who have had a couple of terrific wins in recent weeks. 4-0 over Watford, who, you know, the season's early pretenders, and they just got blown away. Josh King and Callum Wilson doing most of the damage in that game.
Yeah, I mean, when Bournemouth play well, they are really, really, really good. I think that Eddie Howe, I just think he's a really interesting guy and an interesting manager and this interesting coach, kind of retired because of injury quite young, really studied, travelled. You know, he famously went to spend time with Sarri when Sarri was at Empoli. Empoli or Lecce? Maybe. Sorry, I've got that wrong.
Anyone of 20 clubs, sorry, manager.
Yeah, one of those. Yes, yeah. I'd like to see him do well. And I really hope that, no disrespect to Bournemouth or Bournemouth fans, but I hope that he can really get them as a top 10 club and then maybe move on to a bigger club or a bigger job and succeed, you know.
Well, how long do you think it's going to be before, as you said, no disrespect to Bournemouth, they've come into the Premier League, established themselves under Howe and been really, they've added something to the league for sure. But how long do you think it's going to be before we see Eddie Howe offered one of these top positions? Because, you know, this, we're in an era at the moment where there's not many top English coaches about. And you look at the Champions League and the teams that are in the last eight, the last 16 of those tournaments, very rarely see English coaches in there.
Do you actually know, which this is based on nothing but a hunch, but I would not be surprised that if Eddie Howe's next job is actually abroad. I've got a sneaking suspicion that you might see him get an offer from somewhere like maybe even a Bundesliga club. You know, the Bundesliga and German football culture, they're very keen to like promote up, you know, so you see a lot of players. I mean, Tedesco is a prime example. Got a team up from the Bundesliga 3, right? And then straight into the Schalke job. Same happened with Tuchel at Mainz and same for Klopp. I reckon maybe that kind of environment would appeal to him, actually. And I don't know, but I'd love to see that. I'd love to see, and actually he's probably the first English manager maybe since obviously there have been English managers abroad recently.
Right.
But I think moving from a Premier League job to abroad.
He would be so well suited to the Bundesliga, actually, I think.
Hoffenheim would be the club that springs to mind.
The only problem with Hoffenheim, actually, if you consider the Bournemouth in terms of revenue, a big club. So I think the challenge would be resources. In the Premier League, actually, he's perfectly placed. If he stayed at Bournemouth the next like 2, 3, 4 years, his stock will keep rising. The football they're playing is wonderful. If you look how the players are evolving, Callum Wilson's got over the early injury problems. It's been terrific. Josh King is just great to watch. And the style that Bournemouth play with is just such a hallmark. But what I love about them is they're just a great fixture in the Premier League. They're always entertaining.
I feel like there's no podcast where I don't mention Jadon Sancho, but he has really set an example, because anyone who's listened to this podcast who's not from England may not appreciate that English players just do not go abroad. It just hardly ever happens. A friend of mine texted me recently. He's a Dortmund fan. He said, I'm pretty sure Sancho's the last English player I saw before Sancho was Kevin Keegan, right? It's true. It just doesn't happen.
Paul Gascoigne.
So I would love to see a few notable exceptions. I would love to see Howe do that. It hadn't really occurred to me before you mentioned it, but I do think he would be suited to one of those teams that are, you know, pushing for the Champions League, and he can get that experience as a coach, because he's a bright a bright light in English coaching.
Actually, speaking of Hoffenheim, we forgot to mention Reece Nelson scored again this weekend.
Yes.
Doing well. So I think actually, you know, a lot of English players are going to, well, not a lot, but there's a, you know, Nelson and Sancho, yeah, I think will pave the way for more English players to go to the Bundesliga. And I think someone like, if imagine if you had someone like Howe at Hoffenheim,
yeah,
and you know, you'd have a lot of that, the top four or five clubs alone in their good, good young English players out to Howe in the Hoffenheim. It's almost too perfect.
It can only be good for the English game. And I was watching the BT Sport coverage of Manchester United versus Newcastle. And they were discussing after the game, Jadon Sancho's call up to the England squad. And Rio Ferdinand was saying, yeah, well, it's great. And he knows Sancho and he knows his family because they're from a similar part of London. Ferdinand said, yeah, but I want to see the likes of Sancho, this young English talent, breaking through in England. But it's just also not going to happen.
And also, does it really matter? I think it's like, if you look at any other major footballing nation or non-major footballing nation, you know, players are everywhere. So I think
you need to be where you're going to develop the fastest and become the best player and play crucially football every week. And, you know, you look at someone like Phil Foden, he's undoubtedly one of the most talented of that new generation coming through for England. But if he doesn't get game time soon, and let's face it, he's not going to get it soon. You know, he plays in a similar position to David Silva and Bernardo Silva. He's not going to get that game time. People like him, players like him, they need to be advised that if they get an offer from these types of teams, the Hoffenheims, the Gladbachs, you know, similar level teams in other leagues in Europe, they need to strongly consider that.
Well, actually, let me say, it's a bit sort of cynical here, but I love the fact that Sancho is here in Germany because he'll be left alone. Like, yeah, because the football watching public in the UK is actually quite insular in terms of its viewing habits. Sancho can come to a game for England, you know, set the game alight for 20 minutes at a time and then return to Germany, and he's kind of off the grid. I mean, Chris Waddle was the same. Chris Waddle, when he went to Marseille, one of the best players in Europe, probably the best player in Europe for that sort of year-long, 18-month period, and didn't get that much coverage in the UK. And hopefully Sancho will have the same thing, where Dortmund is a safe haven to develop his game.
Well, in the past, where English players have played abroad, you mentioned Gascoigne, Waddle.
David Platt.
Right.
But yeah, Platt, Des Walker, Keegan going back even further, Ian Rush, well, Lineker, not English, but British. When they have gone, though, and all of those players we just mentioned went at the peak of their career for a big move, you know, and it was kind of a safe bet almost. It was, or not a safe bet, but like, you know, this is one last challenge for me. The difference now is that we're seeing guys at the very start of their career breaking through, and that's what makes it really exciting.
Yeah, definitely. And we've said this before a million times, the Bundesliga is the perfect, perfect place for those talents to develop, because, you know, they have a real, tactically, it's not a million miles away. It's very energetic, you know, very technical as well. And they get game time.
Yeah. And it's actually really physical as well.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the games are really, really tough.
You know, I wonder, I mean, you know, a player that's beloved to at least two thirds of this podcast, Jack Wilshere, I wonder if someone like him considered at some point a move like that, you know, maybe a move completely out of your context and try something new. I wonder.
Well, I think he turned down Valencia a couple of seasons ago.
That's a shame.
I think he turned him down on loan, and he might have turned down a permanent deal with him as well. But I always thought actually Jack was perfectly suited to La Liga.
Right.
I think but unfortunately, I just don't think we'll ever see the Jack Wilshere that we thought we were going to see in 2011.
It's unfortunate that West Ham have started to play well at a time when Wilshere is nowhere near the team.
Yeah. Very quickly, I feel it'd be remiss not to mention it very quickly. The case against Cristiano Ronaldo continues to build. There's obviously some great reporting you can find. There's a Ewan McKenna piece, which is fantastic. And Shireen Ahmed has done a great section on, I think, the Burn It Down podcast on that. And she's written for Time magazine about it. All I'll say at this point, because the case is still developing, it's very interesting and notable that the key sponsors for Ronaldo have stepped away, or at least had an element of arm's length in recent statements. So they've said, you know, in EA Sports case, and they've taken him off the cover of the games.
Yep.
Nike have made a statement expressing grave concern. And you just have to feel that, you know, the storm clouds are really rumbling over this case. And it'll be fascinating to see how it develops in the next few weeks, because things seem to be moving quite quickly, I think.
Yeah, well, the Me Too movement hasn't really kind of spread into the sports world so much. Mm. So this is a really interesting case, and it's unbelievable that it's affecting one of the biggest sports stars on the planet.
Right.
So how this turns out, it could really set a precedent.
I must say as well, I'm really encouraged by the sensitivity with which this has been handled. Der Spiegel, I think, have done a great job.
Absolutely.
The follow-up pieces, Ewan McKenna has been very interesting, as I mentioned. Unusual Efforts podcast have been great. But I'm just encouraged to see, you know, peers of ours in the football writing community, but also beyond that, really tackling this case with forensic detail.
Yeah.
There's been some great coverage. I would say not too much sensationalism of it. And I think that bodes well, because this isn't just about Ronaldo, Cristiano Ronaldo. It's about how we handle these allegations. Are they taken seriously? Can people come forward and feel they'll get a fair hearing? And so far, you know, it took a while to get to this point. I think 2017 is when the piece first came out in April.
It's been going for well over a year now. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, you mentioned Der Spiegel there. They've got a lot of experience in building and publishing these kind of cases, and they've done it with the utmost professionalism. And Christoph Winterbach, we should mention as well, the Hamburg-based journalist who was, he's a sports editor there at Der Spiegel. He's been key to all of this. So yeah, it's we're all very interested to see how this is concluded.
I think you said that, you know, you were kind of encouraged by a lot of the sensitivity with a lot, how this has been handled. I kind of would like to...
Oh, and not by the clubs. I mean, Juventus.
No. I wasn't going to pull you up on that. I was also say it's a shame. It is a real shame that there has been so much insensitivity on the other side of it, where people are using athletic ability as a reason that it would not be something that he would do or anything like that. You know,
yeah. And I think that's... As a means of defence.
Yeah, and I think the statement from Juve was... kind of gross, actually. Right. It was
very poor, wasn't it?
I don't think they needed to do it for a start, and I think they could have. I think this is the thing, that in a situation like this, where, you know, there's allegations been made, but legally at the moment he's not been convicted or charged, you know, so the club can come out and absolutely like tackle these head on, you know, with a sensitivity, and separate that from the kind of sporting side if they have to. I think this public, you know, he's a champion and therefore and it rightly got a lot of pushback online, and I think they followed it up with a retweet of I think a Juve women's which was also very transparent.
I mean, all I would say with that, and Juventus, you know, if anyone from that camp has listened to this at all, Juventus is a club that actually has had a substantial rebrand in recent years. They're very conscious of image, very conscious of being a family club, a club for the youth. You know, this is a club that obviously cares very greatly about how they're perceived, and I think maybe to an extent care about maybe actually, you know, what they're doing behind the scenes as well. So for them to take a step like this, they've got to have a rethink and be, look, is this who we really want to be? Because we're not only talking about Ronaldo, who is one of our star players and who is a 100 million euro asset we've invested in. This is also bigger than Ronaldo. Like, Juventus will be Juventus with or without Ronaldo. You know, 5 years from now, they'll still be Juventus. And they've got to think very carefully about what kind of legacy do we want as a result of this? You know, do we want to be a club where people can feel comfortable, can support, can come and feel like, you know, we're part of the Juventus experience without... with, you know, I mean, a statement of incredible insensitivity online.
Well, you know, as you say, in a few years' time, when people look back on this, however it turns out, they will remember how it was handled at the time.
Right. Can I just throw in Wolverhampton Wanderers, because they won again? Sorry to jump in, but I have to sort of...
Underlining their status as the best ever team to be promoted to the Premier League.
And they're only 5 points off top, so it's on. It is still on.
Because I just want to say that they've done that. So that is such a beautifully coached and balanced team.
Yeah,
I love that they create chances. I love their patience against opposition, both superior and inferior, the way they stick to their guns and play their football. I think that's what's so nice about Wolves this year, is they remind me of... You know, when Fulham came up with it, I think it was Tigana. And they just play their game.
And his toothpick.
They just
iconic.
Wolves just play their game, and I really like that. Like, teams that come up with... And Brighton as well. Let me give Brighton some respect too, because there's another side that's very hard to break down. and they are, you know, quick to establish themselves as a Premier League
fixture. They're hard to break down at the Amex.
Yes, fair enough, fair enough, absolutely fair enough.
So basically, I'm taking from this podcast that after our doom and gloom, the future of football a couple of weeks ago, actually everything's fine.
Yeah, it's all fine.
Can I give a quick shout out, actually, to, I was in Tbilisi for the weekend and I wanted to shout out Ash, my friend who lives in Tbilisi, who's listens to the podcast.
Oh, awesome.
Huge Liverpool fan. I really hope Liverpool sign Nabil Fekir so he can stop telling me about how much he wishes that Liverpool would sign Nabil Fekir. But I said I'd give him a shout out and yeah, top man. So
can I say also, Ash, we've barely mentioned the result, the stunning
nil-nil
draw.
We haven't at all.
Well, no,
yeah.
No.
Game of the weekend.
Ash, if you're listening, obviously, you know, as a smart football man, you'll find that game an absorbing encounter. I'm sure you'll be rewatching the nil-nil draw many times in future because it was obviously a connoisseur's delight, which means to say it was not very interesting.
We probably should have mentioned that game at some point.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so, because I think that game was so hyped and it was raised to the rafters as an example of, you know, two teams inventing football. But actually, yeah, it felt like a Champions League first leg, which in a sense, essentially it was, because frankly, those teams are not going to drop that many points against other opposition this season.
Yeah, there seemed to be just not a lot of control in either midfield, and I think the whole game suffered on that.
And poor Gabriel Jesus, you know, penalty taker in Aguero's absence, and Mahrez takes the ball off him, and I think that ball's still travelling somewhere over Liverpool.
Oh Lord.
Just landed in the Mersey.
Over the Irish Sea.
I mean, one thing I will say about that game is Liverpool Man City, it's quickly feeling like the new big fixture in English football. And it's also feeling like the kind of game where you can't tell from the outside whether it's being played home or away for either team, because in terms of how they set up now and the way they nullify each other, I mean it's so funny how Liverpool even went out and got themselves a Brazilian ball playing goalkeeper. And there was one moment of pure parody. I think it was in the second half, either the end of the first half or the start of the second half, when Liverpool tried to play, no, so Man City were trying to play out from the back, and the ball goes in and out of the Liverpool area, like the Man City area, three or four times. And it was like Benny Hill. It was absolutely comic.
It was like that thing that Barca do when they play 9-1-2s when they're 4-1 up and it's the 88th minute. But it was just in their box in a 0-0. Actually, quickly touching on the game though, because one thing you said there where it feels like the new big fixture, that first opening, well, the first 8 minutes were frantic, and it reminded me of the peak kind of Arsenal Man United games where they would explode at the beginning and then sometimes maybe not be the greatest games, and it really didn't feel like it was going to kick off.
I thought the game was going to have it felt like there was a second wind coming, like
about an hour mark.
Exactly, yeah. And yeah, midway through that second half, I thought maybe Liverpool are going to mount something here, but yeah, it ultimately.
Can I sound really harsh?
There will be no DVD.
Can I sound really harsh? It's like, listen to those kind of, like, I'm not going to name any names, but it's like listening to sort of down-tempo electronica acts in sort of like sort of early 2000s where they had a big build and you expect like a drop, a big bass drop, and they just never added the drop. And the song's like 8 minutes long and you're like...
Teases.
Yeah, it's like it never actually comes.
So disappointing.
Should we wrap up? Because you need to... you're jet-setting.
Yeah, I'm jet-setting. I'm going to New York, everyone. Not to sort of make you feel bad about, you know...
Can I do a quick bit of housekeeping?
Yes,
before
you can.
Is it housekeeping? Is that what you call it?
Yeah, housekeeping.
We're not sure if we're going to do a podcast next week because Moussa is away. It is an international break. We might do. So we will tweet it.
Yeah.
And also, I'm on an international break because I'm literally...
Moussa's on an international break.
Did I mention I was going to New York? Sorry, did I mention I was going to New York?
No. When's that?
I'm going to New York.
Oh, wow. Great.
Yeah, thanks.
Have a nice... Where is that?
New York. No, it is. New York.
I'm going to Manchester, so who's the real winner?
That's true. Michael, your thoughts?
I'm going to Bonn.
Actually, one thing I will say, the reason I'm in New York, and this is slightly work-related, is I'm doing...
You're doing a plug.
I'm doing a plug, yeah. We're doing a song for the Bundesliga because the Bundesliga have opened an office. I can talk about this now. They're opening a US office to boost their presence out there, which is really exciting for them because the Bundesliga right now is, in the words of the young people, it's popping right now. The young people say that. My sister says that, so that counts as a young person. And so we've written a song for them, my band, which is quite exciting. So we'll be doing that out there.
What's your band called?
I'm not going to go that far, but I'm just saying that I make music.
You can just find it on his Twitter bio.
Yeah, you can find my Twitter bio. But all I'm saying is I'm very excited to be there for both personal and professional reasons.
Are you going to go and see the basketball?
Haven't got tickets yet. Going to see some opera, actually, and some break dancing. And we're going to a zoo. So, you know.
All right, then. Well,
I don't know what to say to that.
High culture and higher culture.
I've got a feeling this is going to need an edit.
Yeah, I think it will. Gentlemen, once again, absolute pleasure. And our audience, thank you so much for listening, and we really appreciate your support. Please tell a friend, tell an enemy, about the Rabonomag podcast. You can find us at Rabonomag on all social media platforms, and please find us wherever you get all your good podcasts. Thank you so much for listening. Take care. Speak soon.